Blog Talk Radio.
Be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, Do black people need to get over slavery? Slavery. Is it a reason or an excuse for the trauma overwhelming the black community? Do black people need to forget about it, or should slavery have become the fuel that ignites a need for unity, self-realization, education, collective economics, mental, spiritual, and physical growth? Is slavery something black people should never forget or get over? Had a disturbing conversation about blacks needing to get over slavery, and that so-called black intellectuals co-sign a need to get over slavery. That not sounding like an intellectual thing to do, I thought that phrase may have referred to black people using slavery as a crutch for their shortcomings and failures, blaming everything on the man. It's bad enough black people have been cut off from their ancestors culturally, spiritually, and physically. It would be unintelligent, illogical, and foolish to forget about chattel slavery in the not-so-distant past. It is as much a part of American history as George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin. It is the beginning of a new era for our enslaved ancestors and their descendants. Elements and residue of slavery are still present in today's society. If black people plan to navigate through today's sometimes intricate web of deception and racism, you will need to know where you have been to help you get to where you are going. To forget about slavery is to forget about being subjected to a system of kidnapping, murder, rape, abuse, sexual abuse, fear, intimidation, psychological warfare, indoctrination, degradation, Jim Crow, segregation, and the civil rights movement. It's bad enough black people can't forget about their heritage because it was taken away from them in slavery and through systemic oppression, exploitation, injustice, and degradation. It is in the best interest of black people to never forget about slavery and unify behind this commonality. But that appears to be something that happens in an ideal world. The real world aftermath is freakishly nightmarish. In attempts to separate themselves or to integrate or assimilate into the so-called American melting pot, black people were met with violence, theft, murder, contempt, and conspiracy. As a people, they were and continue to be systematically subjected to their oppressors, the descendants of their oppressors, and, unfortunately, their own kind. If assimilation means becoming cruel, exploitative, narcissistic, materialistic, sadistic, and an anti-life-driven people, I strongly suggest that black people decline membership in that club. I suggest we take a look at Black Wall Street, Rosewood, Malcolm X, Medgar Evers, Martin Luther King, the Black Panther Party, and like examples of what we can do if we unite and work toward a common goal. All these people have that in common. They show you what people of color, black folks, can do if you put your mind to something. I doubt that they forgot about slavery, so-called Reconstruction, Jim Crow, the KKK, lynching, and the racist U.S. judicial, legislative, and executive branches. The Jews never forgot about the Holocaust and somebody gave them some land, occupied or not. They maintain their identity and sovereignty. The indigenous peoples of North America never forgot about the North American Holocaust. Some of them received some of their own real estate. They maintained their identity, but not their sovereignty. White supremacy continues to impact on blacks till this very day. Why would blacks forget about that? Did an avalanche of drugs, sex, materialism, classism serve to aid in disconnecting some blacks from their not-so-glorious condition? Have they forgotten, or do they simply don't care? Eight-way slavery affected black families and still has an impact today by Atlantic star Yannick Dawkins. She says, broken traditions. African family traditions, which varied according to the national origin and religion, could not be replicated in the New World after Africans were forced into slavery. The slave trade was responsible for breaking up African families. Husbands, wives, and children could be sold separately because U.S. law did not legally recognize their families. So why would they? If you're a piece of wood to them, you're no more than a cow. I mean, they're not going to respect your family. So, from provocative thought, once the government separated black families, does the government play a role in separating black families today? Did this practice facilitate the devaluing of the family structure and the slaves, some slaves, and their descendants? Rather, it did or not, can black people get back to uplifting and valuing the family structure regardless of what happened? Is that possible? Back to the article, broken families, she talks about. Enslaved black people were denied a secure family life because they were property and could not legally marry. A permanent family could not be a guaranteed part of enslaved people's lives. They had no right to live or stay together, no right to their own children, and it was common for enslaved parents and children to live apart. Now remember, the young lady is saying that these ways affected black families and still has an impact on today. Well, we have some similarities, apparently, because today we have an opportunity to form strong families now. Why are there so many children being born out of wedlock and the family structure? Did blacks learn to devalue family during and after the chattel slavery captivity era? Is this phenomenon more complex than slavery? There appears to be a striking resemblance between how the family was impacted upon during slavery and how some families' relationships are today. In fact, it appears to mirror the past when it comes, was common for enslaved parents and children to live apart. It is common for parents and children to live apart today. So we have some of the same conditions today that exists during the time of when people, our black people were being were property here, you know, by law. History.com says slave owners sought to make their slaves completely dependent on them, and a system of restrictive codes governed life among slaves. They were usually prohibited from learning to read and write, and their behavior and movement was restricted. All right? Many masters took sexual liberties with slave women and rewarded obedient slave behavior with favors. That's very important. While rebellious slaves were brutally punished, a strict hierarchy, that means the order from the lowest to the highest, right? From the privileged house slaves and the skilled armed slaves down to the lowly field hand, the guy picking the cotton, digging the holes in the ground, he was like dirt. It was dirt, then it was that slave. They helped keep the slaves divided by creating this hierarchy. Hierarchy means in order to have a hierarchy, you have to have something that's lower than you. So all right here, they put into a slave's mind that he's better than another slave because he's higher up on the food chain. So you digging that hole, you less of a man than I am. Your life is not as valued as my life. You understand? So that's what hierarchies create. So we have, it said it kept them divided and less likely to organize against their masters. Now, it says slave marriages had no legal bias or basis. But slaves did marry to raise large families. Most slave owners encouraged this practice, but nonetheless did not usually hesitate to divide family by sale or removal. You know, money rules everything. Cash rules everything around, right? And people were basically a resource to these people. And you still resource it today, but that's another show. We're not even going to get into that. So back to this thing about being this hierarchy and being divided. We have a lot of talk about people who make it, leave the community, never come back, never do anything. A brother was just murdered recently, a guy who was successful, but he stayed in the community to help the community out. You know, it was a very dangerous thing to do. But still, you know, you got to reach back and help somebody else. And he's a very good example of what you do when the people who have should help the people who have not. So that was an excellent message that he represented in the neighborhood. He crossed all kinds of lines that were dividing the people in his community. He crossed all of the lines to help people. He didn't care who they were. He helped them. So just because you're in another class, you're in a middle class, upper middle class, rich, why shouldn't you be helping out people who have less than you? But the mentality apparently seems to be that way for some people. They are not reaching back and helping other people. I think LeBron James is doing some things. There's a couple of guys that are doing other things that have, you know, small fortunes compared to some other people. Great fortunes compared to the people that they help, right? So they also spoke about this. History.com was talking about how the government systems kind of like promote that the family be separated. They talked about the welfare system. You know, which is a good system. If you need some food stamps or some cash, you're not working, you sign up, you know, you apply, you know, to determine how much you get and things like that. It's a good system. But it said that how welfare undermines marriages and what to do about it from the Heritage Foundation. I thought this was very interesting because, you know, you might think, you know, well, how do you knock a system that's helping people that's, you know, feed themselves and, you know, put a little money in their pocket and medical and stuff like that because we all get sick. They said welfare and the decline of marriage. They've made a correlation between welfare and the decline of marriage. Now, they said it's no accident that the collapse of marriage in America largely began with the war on poverty. There's another correlation. The war on poverty and this decline of marriage, and the proliferation of means-tested welfare programs that it fostered. When the war on poverty began, only a single welfare program, Aid to Families with Dependent Children, assisted single parents. Today, dozens of programs provide benefits to families with children, including an Earned Income Tax Credit, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, TANF, excuse me, the Women, Infants, and Children, that's WIC, food programs, supplements, Social Security, food stamps, child nutrition programs, public housing and Section 8 housing, medical and stuff like that, right? Although married couples and children can be also receive aid through these programs, the overwhelming majority of assistance to families with children goes to single-parent households, they say. They say growing welfare state has promoted single parenthood in two ways. First, the means test welfare programs such as those described above financially enable single parenthood. It's difficult for single mothers with a high school degree or less to support children without the aid of another parent. Means tested welfare programs substantially reduce this difficulty by providing extensive support to single parents. Welfare thereby reduces the financial need for marriage. So instead of joining themselves with somebody, they said people get married to the welfare system. So, since the beginning of the war, probably less educated mothers have increasingly become married to the welfare state and to the U.S. taxpayer rather than to the fathers of their children. That's interesting. Penalizing marriage is the second major problem. It is that the means-tested welfare system actively penalizes low-income parents who do marry. All means-tested welfare programs are designed so that family benefits are reduced as earnings rise. In practice, this means that low-income single mother marries and an employed father, her welfare benefits will generally be substantially reduced. The mother can maximize welfare by remaining unmarried and keeping the father's income off the books. Illiteracy. School was not a part of the option for enslaved children, and in most cases, it was illegal to teach enslaved black people to read and write. This is one of the other conditions the original lady was talking about that impact on the slaves is impacting on us now. This education is very, very important today. School was not an option for enslaved children. I mean, you didn't get no education. You learn how to pick that cotton, dig that hole, or whatever you do with a horse and a buggy, you know, that type of thing, right? So, from provocative thought, it was illegal to teach a slave to read and write. Poor, impoverished black communities may have inferior educational supports, but that is no reason not to learn how to read and write. Slaves in captivity under the threat of death became educated. Why the disinterest in education in some black populations today? There was a time when death was the penalty for reading. When you think about it, death is the penalty for not educating yourself. Another thing that affected the slaves, and they said affects black people present day, this young lady saying, she said unpaid workforce. She said the use of unpaid labor to produce wealth lay in the heart of slavery in America. I think that's a well-known fact. Enslaved people usually worked from early in the morning until the late night. Women often returned to work shortly after giving birth, sometimes running from the fields during the day to feed their infants. Well, back from provocative thought, again, comment on that. Wealth controls economics, production, distribution, and sale of resources, goods, and services, right? U.S. economics was founded on the economy of slavery. Economics control employment, salary, unequal distribution of economics, opportunity creates poverty. That's how capitalism and racism work together. Slavery also causes broken legacy. Enslaved families were also divided for inheritance when an owner died. That's like property. I'm giving up. You can have the car. You can have the truck. You can have the my gold watches and stuff like that. So they were inheritance. Or because their owners or adult children moved away to create new lives, taking some of the enslaved people with them. Though families were destroyed, this is something I looked up. Though families were destroyed, some blacks tried to reunite with their family members. They had a guy, and he was looking for his mother and looking for his sister. He traveled, you know, back down south looking for him. From the beginning, the enslaved were brutally separated from their families and culture. Blacks inherited a slave fortune, a slave's fortune, in the cesspool of the belly of a nation that devalued and debased them. That is not much of a springboard to wealth. They said it affected the mortality rate. More than one half of black infants died before they were 1 year old. This mortality rate was almost double that of whites, although the survival rate improved after enslaved children reached a year of age. Their mortality rate continued to double that of whites until they were 14 years old. So they went out of the woods until they were 14. Soldiers' lives. I thought this was interesting right here. During the Civil War, approximately 180,000 black soldiers served in the Union Army. The families of the soldiers frequently camped in makeshift villages near the army to be near their husbands, sons, and fathers. The soldiers assisted them as they could, sharing food and clothing from their own military rations when possible. So that's how families bonded. So we may have been separated, forced to be separated during slavery, but when black people had an opportunity, they stayed together. That's how strong family was back then. That's the Civil War. These people traveled near the war, Civil War. And that was one of the worst wars the United States ever had, period. They had more casualties in that war than they had in any other war. So here, black soldiers remain connected to their families and established family barracks for living quarters and shared their rations with their family. Now, you got to come on now. That's back then. Those conditions are way worse than the conditions we have in now. Rape of women. Slave women were constantly sexually abused by white men, and they had no legal right to resist that abuse. No legal right to resist abuse. Can you imagine that? We have a caller. Welcome to Provocative Thought. Hold on for a minute because it seems like it's taking a long time to. There we go. Hello, caller. 4159. Welcome to Provocative Thought. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hello?
Hello? Yes. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes,
okay.
I can.
Salaam alaikum call.
Wa alaikum
as-salam. Listening to what you're saying and answering my thoughts on that is, should we forget about slavery? My answer is definitely a no. We need the history of slavery in order to unify ourselves as a people. It seems that the absence of this generation of knowing about slavery is falling deeper into the pit. There's no family structure. There's no morals. There's no concern spiritually, you know, for one another. And that's because assimilation and believing that they're part of this society, they're part of this program. So if we constantly keep thinking we're part of the program, we're never going to advance. Because we never was a part of the program. The program was us. Their wealth was us. So if we continue to think that we're going to be a part of that plan, we're never going to get the wealth that we need. Because we're never going to be focused on us. We're just going to be focused on individual getting what they have. Each person get what they want. Narcissistic, selfish, you know, not caring. Separation of family. So I really do believe that our children... And moving forward, we should never forget the history of slavery.
Okay, so I have two questions to ask you. One, so assimilating to the culture of European culture here in America, don't Europeans have families?
Don't they have what, say again?
Hello? Don't
yeah, I'm here.
Europeans have families and family culture?
They do.
So how is it that, that it impacted on blacks in a negative way. If they have family culture, the Europeans have family, and they have family unity and things like that.
Because we were prohibited from providing that same culture for our own. So we're trying to compare what we had to what they have, and there's really not a real comparison. Anything that they've learned, they really did learn from us to a certain point. But when it came down to family, they had that option of exercising it. A man, white man, wasn't removed from his children and his wife and made to be separated. You know, children wasn't taken from their parents and placed on plantations or sold or just given away as a birthday gift. So
right.
As far as family today, we still suffer from that condition. Willingly, we do it now. We do it in our music. We do it in our movies. We do it in our books. We do it in our songs. We do it in our speech. We automatically start to separate ourselves.
So you're saying that people today are not family or less family orientated because their ancestors were forced to be separated from the families?
Absolutely.
Okay, so
absolutely.
So is it something that they learned? Who taught them that? Because, you know, I know a lot of black families where they have, you know, family's a strong thing.
Right. I think it wasn't just what's taught. I think it was the culture of what they designed. And over time, that design became easy and simple. You know, it was, you know, easy to trash each other, easy to walk away. You never had a real connection from the beginning. If you did, you didn't know how to maintain that connection. There are other devices that was placed, you know, as far as for black men and black women. You know, the black man wasn't able to be the provider that the white man was. The black woman was given opportunities to emasculate the man, you know, women's rights. Lots of tools were placed. And as far as for today, those tools are working well. You know, you can see it in our culture, in our music. You can see it even in women who say that they're conscious and educated. You hear the thing, I'm a strong black woman. I don't need a man. I don't need this. So we got to go back and think, all right, where did that come from? How did that get there?
And that came from, where did that come from?
I believe it came from the simple fact that they separated us from day one. Get the men away from the women, the children away from them, get the educated away from them, get the spiritual away from them, you know, and then place this man, this European, in front of this black woman, and her mate can't compete. This man is able to conquer. He's able to go out there and provide. So the black woman is saying that from another angle. She's saying that, and of course she wants that. She deserves that. But when it comes down to it,
okay,
she can't receive that 100% fully across the board. Not everyone. Some people did survive.
All right. So you're saying that basically, I guess this would be after the Reconstruction era, right up until about the 60s, when they started, women's rights had kicked in for black women also, started getting jobs, going to college and things like that. And this, as the guy was saying here from the history.com, I think it was history, about how government programs kind of like made it better in terms of receiving benefits that you come from a single family, because as soon as you married a guy that was working, you got cut because you were, you know, making too much money, so they cut your food stamps and you had less. But, you know, how did that, you know, stop you from getting married? I don't understand that part. Because if you're working, you can subsidize the food stamps that you were getting with the income you was working. So, you know, what's the problem with that?
I think the problem with that is not having an education or the partnership in a marriage to understand exactly what you're dealing with, the cards that you're dealt. It feels like we were still trying to compete. Even though we're given those things, we still want the materialism that other group of people wanted. We still want the vacations. We still want to add up to them. But for us to add up, we need to have a different plan. I think it really hit the men very hard too, because of testosterone and masculinity and how they designed to emasculate the man. I think for today, the survival would be is that as black men, we have to redesign being a black man. It may mean that your woman is the breadwinner. She may be the educated one, but you may be the one who has to go home and, hey, I'm going to have to learn how to cook, clean, take care of kids, and educate the children till you can educate yourself or get back. It needs to be a partnership. There needs to be an equal partnership and no separation.
So basically, even though the say a couple married and the father was working, she was on welfare, she got her benefits reduced, they were still impoverished with this guy's employment because his employment didn't provide the things that people might want in this society. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay. And we live in a society where people are advocating materialism and success, and everybody wants to be a part of that, well, what they call the American dream. So maybe that's where they got the saying, I can do bad by myself from.
Exactly. I think the other part to it is understanding what our addictions are. I think, you know, it's not the simple fact of forgetting slavery, but also remembering how we survived, you know, through slavery. And today, I think the plan is to let the people be a part of something, but what they're a part of is really not freedom or going to provide for them or give them what they really need, you know, which is family, that sense of honor. So we try to take on materialism as our source of success. I got the car. I got a house. I don't live around a whole bunch of other black folks doing bad. I'm in the suburbs. You know, my kid went to college. They went to school. They did this, which are good things. But then there's that separation, individualism. Back then, everyone depended on one another. You know, and I know there's a time you could go and knock on somebody's door. Your mom said, go knock on so-and-so's door, see if they got some bread. They might not even tell you that. They might just give you a note. Get this to so-and-so. You come out, you got some bread. Or they may gave you a couple food stamps. We can't do that today. We don't have that type of community. We don't have neighbors. We have individuals. And the further we go in advance and becoming hooked on their devices and buying things and trying to be like them, the further we go right back. So if we forget slavery, then we won't know how we survived. We're just going to be there. We are consumers.
Well, it's interesting that we have that there's a correlation or there's similarities occurring now that occurred during slavery. You understand what I'm saying? Chattel slavery. You know, it's the similarities in the behaviors of black people that occurs now, right? That you have people living apart from the families and stuff like that. You have I was getting ready to talk about the rape of women and things like that, you know. It's like, you know, it's rampant in the community, you know. It's like, it's, you know, sexual abuse is, you know, that's not like a something that happens once in a blue moon.
It almost feels,
you know, and I'm not blaming it on black people either. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that's a black thing. But we only talking about the black community right now because, I mean, it's broader than the black community. But right now we're trying to keep it within the other, you know. That community.
I had this theory for myself that says if they have a plan and you know their plan, if their plan is to separate the family and now you got an opportunity to be a family, then reverse that. Reverse it. You know, if they trying to give you bad programming through television, reprogram yourself. Turn the television off and write your own program. You know, they want to give you bad music, turn the music off, write your own music. You know, they say you can't be with your woman or whatever. Go back and be with your woman, even if y'all are estranged. You can go back and make amends and make plan to take care of your children, you know, together or individually. But the object should be, hey, let's do this. We already know what the devices they put in front of us to stop us. We have opportunity now, but we're not taking hold of all the opportunities because now we're chasing after the dream. And their dream is a nightmare as far as I'm concerned.
Mm. So, you know, what about the whole idea that, you know, hey, look, I don't need a guy, right? Or a guy that's saying, I don't need a woman who cannot help me financially. You understand what I'm saying? So, I mean, because maybe folks are looking for people, a business partner. You understand what I'm saying? Maybe they're looking for, okay, I got a college degree. I'm looking for a woman with a college degree who can whose income is like mine, you know, who we have, you know, if we put these incomes together, we can come out somewhere between $60,000-$80,000 a year, something like that.
And that's great. You know, if you have a plan for not just your family, and if you have a plan to, you know, share those ideas and transform other people's lives. But if it's just for that couple and this is what they want to do, all right, that's great. But when it comes down to it, all other groups of people, their plan is to uplift the next. They had a thing on YouTube where a Chinese guy was saying, he said, listen, I don't have a problem with black folks and I don't have a problem with white folks. I don't have a problem with many other groups of people. He said, but when I opened up my store, I got to think about that Chinese man. I'm accountable for that next Chinese man. So I feel as though we should have that same accountability before we even try to move out. Because if you know, it's like the drug game. You get in, you make some money, but you think you're going to really stay there? You done left all these poor people and people struggling, people that helped you. Now you out, you want to live lavish? You know, and you have two groups of people that are going to come after you. You're going to have vengeful white folks who feel as though you should not be in that position because you're black. And then you got jealous black folks who feel as though they don't want you in that position because they haven't made it there and you're not trying to help.
Crabs in the barrel syndrome. Okay, well.
Yep.
That's very interesting. But I was trying to get to if you thought that a guy who graduated from college, in order to help, you know, alleviate some of this thing, should he not look past a woman who may be on welfare? You know what I'm saying? Or vice versa. A woman graduated from college, should she not look past a brother who might be, you know, a little down? He ain't making no money right now. He's at a substandard job, you know, in terms of creating these families. Because, you know, everybody don't have a college degree.
Right. And that's why I said we are going to have to redesign how we look at our family structure, because there's other values that are left out besides a college education. A lot of people have college education, but they can't rear children. They may be educated, but they're not intelligent enough, you know, to direct people. They may just know that one aspect of whatever it is that they learned, but they lack in other parts that would make a marriage or a union successful. You know, people are, they may have money, but they don't have patience. You know, they feel as though, well, I got money, I could talk to you any kind of way. Yeah, you have a wife, you have a husband, but you're still destroying the same thing that you think you're trying to build because you don't have these other traits. You haven't developed them. So as far as someone that's educated, that has to go with a compatibility, and I don't think we put much energy into finding people who are compatible as opposed to on all levels. I think we look for looks, wealth, you know, and what they can bring to the table. Well, when basically what I'm hearing from a lot of people, what they can bring to the table is the same thing that
right,
white
there
folks
you go. Or how it impacts on what's coming to the table, because that's how
right.
They were saying about the lady wrote about the welfare system. The parents getting say I'm getting $100-$200 worth of food stamps. Now I married a sister. She got this little job. Ain't no real job. You know, but it's a little something. It's enough to take my stamps down. So I'm like, oh, okay, we're gonna still be together, right? But we're not gonna get married, and we're gonna be together. But you know. Because you cut my stamps as I hook up with you. So that type of thing, that's what I'm talking about. You know, so, you know, if I was a college graduate person, you know, should they look at that situation and say that's a situation, you know, should they be open to that type of stuff? Oh, okay, well, she's on welfare. What's the problem? I don't have a problem with that. Let's hook up.
Right.
You know, it's going to impact on her stamps if you get married. But at some
right.
point, you want to get off of welfare. It's not a permanent supposed to be a permanent situation. At some point, we want to, you know, not be on welfare.
Well, I think, you know, like you said, you know, I agree. I just feel as though we don't never have a plan. We go in, we plan on how to get a person, we plan on certain things, but we're not planning a life, you know, fully. And I don't think we do it well because we're not trained to do that. And I don't think we have a lot of examples on how to do it, you know. So I feel as though, for me, it would be easy to reverse what I know somebody wants me to do that's not good for me. It's almost like going to church, you know. You say, hey, you know, you shouldn't be drinking. Hey, all right, I don't need to drink. I just need to see some other people that was drunk. All right, that didn't work out for them. I ain't going in that direction, you know.
Right.
We need to find out what's beneficial. You know, we know, hey, if you put this poison in your body, you're going to die. But some people do put the poison in their body because they don't know. I might not die today, but they like the poison. So I say it's the
right.
same thing for relationships, the same thing for not having education in history. We keep indulging on this poison and adding more that we're not healing ourselves. So I say reverse it. Just go back, reverse it. And let me say this one thing. The one thing that was fearful for these group of people, these Europeans, was family. They know this. They do not want a successful black family because that means that they are going to lose economically. They need that division. So I say that's where you start. And if they say you can't be educated but you got a chance to get education, I say get it. Nowadays you don't even have to go to college. You know, you can go online. You ain't even got to leave your house. You can go online. YouTube is like a university, you know.
Well, what about high school? What about the 12 years that they give you for free? Why not take advantage of that? Regardless if you have old books or not, you still can learn to read, and math never changes.
I feel as though high school has its benefits and disadvantages. I feel as though, for me personally, I feel as though high school should be shortened by the hours. You know, you have 4 hours. If you're in there for 8 hours, 4 hours of that should be your academics. The next should be vocational. You know, you come out with a trade. You're in school for 12 years. You come out with a high school diploma. You go to college for 4 years. You come out with a degree. Something's wrong there. You go for another 6. You got a doctorate. But you're in there for 12, and you're walking out with nothing that doesn't even have any weight training or anything.
Right.
So I feel as though we need to redesign.
So it's like you went
to
daycare for 12 years.
Exactly.
You're saying you went to daycare for 12 years.
Yep.
13%. Okay, well, do you see other correlations? So there's correlations between what's happening to black people now, which you can relate back to slavery and government's intervention impairing black people from uniting. And I'm not saying that, I'm saying, you know, I know that this is a hard situation that I'm talking about. It's almost impossible when you speak about chattel slavery, but those guys fought all the time. You know what I'm saying? They gathered together, met, try to figure out things to do. They went against their slave masters and things like that, and they learned, they educated themselves on what I was enslaved. And back in the 1920s, they had the place that I like to talk about, Black Wall Street. They
mm-hmm.
was lynching, lynching brothers like it was like, you know, a vaudeville show or something. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and they got together, forced through this segregation thing, and forced them to work together, and look what happened. Look what they came up with. You know what I'm saying? I mean, why can't we do that now? Where's our Wall Street at today? We have more blacks with more wealth today, right? Where's our
mm-hmm.
Wall Street? Where's that black community where black people, you know, can go? Okay, you go there, they're going to help you come up, right? You just build onto
mm-hmm.
the community. We build more. Where's that at? Where's it at? I mean, and maybe it's this somewhere. There is a place like that, but where is it?
I think that those that have it are in fear of losing it, as opposed to those back then with the, you know, the Black Wall Street. They saw the dollar circulate within their community. Today we don't see that dollar circulate like that, and they created
that. They had
a
community. How about that?
They had a community. They had that, and not only that, they were in charge on how that dollar came and was made. today's people, a lot of them, they have money, but they are not the creators of that money. They may have an idea. They sold that idea to someone else who had greater wealth, took them as a CFO, CEO, whatever, or paid them for that. You know, if they're an entertainer, that their wealth is coming from someone that gives them a paycheck. And if that person is giving them a
job,
paycheck.
That what you're saying?
Exactly. They're scared of losing what they have. As opposed back then, people didn't have much. So whatever they did have, they knew that if we take this and we combine this, it will provide something for us. We can make it. But today, we're separated. We're just separated. You know?
So you basically just said that the powers to be are suppressing blacks who have some kind of wealth from helping blacks who do not have wealth. Impoverished.
Yep.
You believe that?
To an extent, I think they're afraid to lose what they have. You know, this money comes from them, so they're afraid, if I go help these people over here and do this, you know, I may not have my position anymore. So they're not really fighting for that cause. But it's funny because you have these groups of people like Oprah Winfrey and the other guy, Michael Jordan, you know, they do a lot of things so-called for blacks in Africa. This is
Michael Jordan?
Say, but they won't. I don't know if it's Michael Jordan.
Oh, I know that.
The other guys. Yeah. But what's happening is they can't do it here. They can't invest that same money here. They can't do it. They're not allowed to do that. If they could, I believe they would do it. But I think there's a reason, and that reason would be because they're going to lose it. This is their wealth. This is that European's wealth. We are their wealth. We've always been their wealth. Land and slaves. Hmm. If you had land and you ain't have a slave, you wasn't wealthy. You wasn't wealthy till you had a slave because you had free labor. So now they're not producing much of anything.
So you're saying that these people, black people who have wealth, are kind of like house niggas.
Yep.
So you heard about the guy that gave $20 million to Spelman?
Mm-hmm.
He was a black guy. He gave $20 million
right.
to Spelman.
Mm-hmm.
So would it, is it you feel it might be some consequences for him doing that?
No. No. Because I don't know who Spelman is financially backed by, as opposed to
it's a black college,
but I don't know who the finance carriers are as far as the bank. You know, who may be on the board of trustees or however, you know, as far as builders and things like that. You know, we have black colleges, and if something goes wrong with this black college, they want to put a field up there. They want to put a Olympic swimming pool. You know what I mean? That's not going to be a black contractor that's going to get that bid to go inside there and do it. So it's definitely going to be somebody white that's going to go inside there and get those bids. You want furniture, you want lighting, you want all these things. So the way I look at it is they don't care if that black man invests $20 million in that because they got an investment in it also. It's not completely black owned.
Oh, so I don't even know. I can't even get into Spelman. Like, all I know Spelman's a black.
Right,
you know.
I'm saying the same. Right, I don't know. But all I'm saying is it's possible to happen. It's possible. It's possible even right now that we can have another police force to come in, you know, it's possible. I mean, it happened with what is that thing that they call when you have to child support. That was an independent group came in. You know, it's not even legal, but they had money, they had funding, they had backing, and now here we are. You know, you have a group of people who can send police to come and get you. But that's also benefits them.
Okay. Well, I guess one point I'm trying to make about the slaves were that there were situations were forced on them. But today people are making decisions that mimic the same result that the slaves had. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because the slaves actually wanted to be with their families, wanted to have families and things like that. And they valued the family system. It's just that they had no power.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They didn't have the power to sustain it. Like, if I'm a slave, I marry your sister, and then dude could sell your sister to somebody across the, you know, down south somewhere. It's over. I'm married. My wife down south. I'm here. He telling me to sleep with this other chick over here because he wants some more people working on his farm.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
I think
they were forced in that situation. They were forced to be separate from each other and, you know, to create all these different families and things like that. But today, people aren't really forced to do that. Not like that. They maybe have situations that make that they make certain decisions. Oh, I'm not getting married because that's going to cut into my check. You know what I'm saying? My support that I'm getting from the state or my Section 8. Oh, you can't live here in Section 8. You moving here. Now we got to pay full rent. Can't afford that. You don't have enough. Your job ain't enough. We're just going to be working poor. We're going to be broke. Worse. You know what I'm saying? Or your job ain't
mm-hmm.
secure enough for me to just get, you know, I don't know. You know, I'm just saying that it just seems like the people who were actually in chattel slavery had very strong feelings about family and unity and things like that. Because like I was saying, they unified many times against slavery.
I think a lot
of people get the wrong idea about them, but that's not the way it went down.
Right. I think one of the things that bonded and held that was spirituality. You know, and not only the spirituality, but because they already came from, you know, whether they came from Africa or whether they were already indigenous here, they still had that. They still knew this. You know what I mean? It was still able to show that. But today we're so far removed from it. Spiritually, we're so far removed. So we're serving money. It ain't even white folks to me no more. It is money. We found a new guy. We found a new slave owner, and that's the money.
Mm.
And as long as we're chasing it that way, it's going to lead us to a valueless lifestyle. You know, and all we have to do is just look at the same people who had the money. They're not happy. They have just as many problems as we had with the money. You know, and it's like you said once before, we're trying to be, you know, not to make it sound negative, but we're trying to be like Whitey. And that's where the problem is. We're trying to be like someone who was the thief. He stole people. He stole land. He's a murderer. He's a crook. You know, and now we want to be like this person. We want to be this. The same person that destroyed you of all your values that made you human. Now you want to become this. You want to be married just like he want to be married. You can throw away a marriage by a piece of paper. So as long as we chasing to be like something that's not godly or right, we going to be in the same predicament.
Hmm. That's it. So slavery has all these things you say stem from slavery. And the author's saying that these behaviors and scenarios have their origin from the captivity here in the Americas with African Americans or black or whatever you want to call, you know, yourself. But you know what I'm talking about when I speak about the slaves here. And, you know, she goes farther on to talk about the rape of women. And say,
mm-hmm.
you know, so the black women have been raped and sexually assaulted from the beginning of their captivity. Right? You're just a thing. I have total control of you, and I'm attracted to you, and I can do what I want to do. You know, right? So what's going to happen? They're going to rape you and probably a couple of guys, too. You understand what I'm saying? Children and more than black women, but let me just leave it to black women. So who knows how many black women have been raped and passed around from man to man nowadays? Because we had, you know, because they're saying that was a situation where black women were forced to have sex with different people, right? Not just the
right.
masters, even the other slaves, you know, you mate with her, you know, get this buck over here with that kind of thing, you know. So, but we have similarities today in that type of behavior that people we're forced to do, we have similarities, people making decisions today. You know what I'm saying? Rape of sexual violence is rampant in this country. So, you know, it's like I said, you know, it's not just relegated to the black community. So I'm, by no means, I'm not even trying to imply that. All right. I said historically, right. From NRCDV Productions, the National Online Resource Center on Violence Against Women, the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence, Carolyn West and Kamala Johnson say historical overview. They said that throughout the U.S. history, the rape of black women was widespread and institutionalized. Legal systems offered little protection, and stereotypes of black women's hypersexuality were used to justify limited social support for black rape victims. Black women developed a culture of silence and engaged in anti-rape organizing to cope with their victimization. So the idea comes from slavery that white men used this as an excuse to rape black women. Even if black women were hypersexual, that does not give anyone the right to rape them. You understand what I'm saying? The white men became hypersexual, it seems like, anyway, they became hypersexual at the sight of the voluptuous, vulnerable, unprotected black woman. This attitude appears to have survived chattel slavery, period. You know, the sex abuse of black men under America's slave system. They were, even black men were abused sexually under the slave system. And while I'm talking about all this sexual abuse is that these things happened to us. We were forced in these situations. How did we gravitate toward doing it ourselves? You understand?
Well,
how did we get from... Go ahead.
I can't remember who these people were, but there was this some scientists, and they were saying that black folks in our DNA from slavery and everything that we're going through, I think it was a comparison to cows. In fact, it was a comparison to cows and chickens. They were talking about how when the cow is going to be slaughtered and the condition that the cow is in, you know, the cow knows it. And that runs into its bloodstream and in its DNA, and then we eat that, you know, that same stress or whatever the chemicals are. But they basically are saying that from slavery, in our DNA to this day, we carry that stress, the depression. It's all there. It's all there. So I'm not surprised that how we're behaving. I'm not surprised at the behavior, you know, of how things are going. It's almost like the Willie Lynch is almost absolutely. It's like after a while, you won't have to do anything. They do it on their own, and that's what we're doing. We kill on our own, you know, and we're being overly sexual on our own. We're being, you know, we're just doing a lot of terrible things on our own.
So let me see. So did black people subliminally learn that to rape is to be powerful because the man in power, the white oppressor and slaver, was taking his woman, right, doing what he wanted to do with him. So did somewhere that register as a power play, and therefore, you know, that was transmitted, and then they took the helm on, you know, what the hell happened? Because, like, you know, you would hate that. You know what I'm saying? Somebody come take your woman out of bed, you know.
But again, we serve money, so you could get that same person, those same group of people to do these actions because they're getting paid. They're going to feed themselves off of this. That's, you know, our hip hop today. A lot of the artists out here today are educated, come from colleges. Lil Wayne went to college. Waka Flocka, all college dudes. You know,
public oh, really?
Completely different story, but they're educated. But the same thing is that they want that money. And what are they willing to do for that money? Well, they're willing to call their women bees and hoes, and, you know, the women are willing to shake their behinds and take off their clothes. Again, is what they're serving. It was what was stripped
okay.
from them.
So did the women learn that through their sexuality they have power, therefore I can use my sexuality to uplift me as an individual in the eyes of other individuals? I mean, is that what you're saying?
I think before they learn how they can uplift themselves through other individuals, I think they learned that from being on that plantation. The first moment they found out, oh, he liked this, I'm going to use this. As they say, you know, prostitution is one of the oldest trades. So I think, you know, there is some power in that. But as far as what we're seeing today is, again, a separation, individualism, narcissism, you know. So no one values anything. They don't value their bodies. It's not the same. Now they're willingly doing it.
Right.
Again, it goes
most rapes of black women is intraracial. Most rapes are intraracial. That means that's the same as black-on-black crime, black-on-black rape.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I'm, you know, family members, intimate partner, acquaintance, things like that. You know, so I'm, you know, it's just the similarities is, you know, is, you know, it's like the same, it's the same thing that happened during chattel slavery, but except that they're not in chattel slavery anymore. It's like, yo, you have a better opportunity to make decisions. Especially about some of these things that we're talking about, you know, like, you know, why are we subjected to this, you know, subjecting each other to the same things that we were subjected to by people who despised us, who thought nothing of us, who, you know, it would, you know,
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
You know, I'm just saying, why didn't that make, you know, cause black people to, you know, maybe it did cause black people, some black people to say, we're never going through that again. You know what I'm saying? I'm never letting anybody do that to me, my kind again. Maybe there are certain people have done that, but then we have a certain population that it has a different effect on. You know what I'm saying? And maybe that's what we're talking about, because I'm sure all black people, and like you and me, we don't want to do that to people, and we don't want that to happen to us. You understand? So, you know, not that we're perfect people or anything like that, you know, but we have our own individual learning process also. But as a people, it just seems to me, like you said about the Willie Lynch letter, that, you know, once these things happened to us, we began to let these things and perpetrate these things to us ourselves, which is, you know, like I'm saying, everything that's happened, a lot of things that's happened to us has happened out of slavery. The country is built on the back of slaves. So we have a slave system, even a police system built to keep slaves in order, runaway slaves and things like that. So how do you think the attitude of the police were in the beginning? You think they just went away? Because years passed, that didn't go anywhere.
I was going to say, for us, and the reason, again, going back to why we need to not let the idea of, you know, slavery go, is because the same tools that used to pacify us, get us, take us over, are still being used today. And they are redesigning as they go. You know, so we have always been the focus. We've always been the focus because they know that, one, we outnumber them across the globe. So we are, of all people of color, came together and just recognized that's a big enough threat. Two, just in America alone, if all the black folks or people of color came together economically and decided to say, hey, listen, this is what we're going to do, Europeans fall. They know this. So being that they know this, they are always redesigning the plan to keep us enslaved, whether it's mentally, spiritually, or physically, or if they just have to outright kill us. But they have never dropped the ball. I feel as though where we fail is we drop the ball. We think having wealth and the money, you know, set us free. We're not free. We are at war. We are at war, but it doesn't feel like war because we're not saying the things that we read about and know about under 200 years ago, but right now it's happening. To me, it looks like the same thing. You know, if a cop shoots somebody in the street and get away with it and they're innocent, you may as well be doing the same thing. You're a lynch mob and you're going to do what you want. You know, but the difference is we have televisions, radios, internet, phones, 1,000 different restaurants to go eat at. We don't feel like we're at war. We don't see it.
Hmm. Well, they say poverty and re-victimization are both risk factors for or consequences for adult sexual violence. Being poor increased the likelihood of being raped, and being raped increased the likelihood of becoming more economically disadvantaged.
You know, being stimulated constantly is not going to help either. And a lot of people are stimulated constantly through the music, through culture. In society, they say they look down on rape and all these deviancies, but they celebrate it, actually. Because if you look at your movies, your music, your literature, it's celebrated. It's kind of funny. It's sort of like, don't take candy from a stranger, but celebrate Halloween.
Right.
And that's how,
they
that's
speak
how it
about,
looks to me.
Yeah, well, they speak about the legal, the commercial sexual exploitation of you know, sex and things like that. You know, but you know, like you're saying, to me, it seems like we live in a hypersexual society, which is another show. But you know, hypersexuality may be related to the leaders of this country and how they behave sexually. You know, understand what I'm saying? So, you know, I don't know if this, you know, the slaves had to be victimized, they were victimized sexually by their captors. No, poor white people didn't have slaves. Is that right?
Poor white folks?
Hello? Yeah, they didn't
I'm
have
here.
Slaves. Yeah, poor white people didn't have slaves.
That's something to look into.
Yeah.
You know, there were blacks that had slaves as well, you know.
Well, they had power, though. They had what they had. So you had to have some kind of income, some kind of wealth in this country to have a slave. You're just not going to have a you can't feed you and your kids. How are you going to have a slave?
Right.
So, you
well,
know.
For the poor, that's another story, too, because for the poor white guy and the poor white woman, you know, they didn't know that they were slaves, too. They thought that they were part of the plan, you know, because of their color or, you know. But, going back to your original thing, should we forget slavery? I say not. I say the Jews didn't forget it. I say Japan didn't forget their plight, and China didn't forget their plight. No other group of people have been traumatized or forgetting. We can't even forget 9/11. We're told not to forget that. So for me, you know, I think slavery is something that should be talked about, but not only talked about, but taught from the proper perspective. Not from American history. I feel as though, you know, black families need to educate themselves and tell their children, grandchildren, the truth. You know, because when you get a watered-down version, it's kind of easy to let it go, especially when you
You know, I never looked at it that way. I never looked at it so watered down that somebody might be looking at it like, okay, well, that was a long time ago. It ain't happening to me.
Right.
Even though it is happening to them now, they are being affected by slavery and the existence of slavery in this country and the fruits of slavery in this country and the mindset of people who are benefited from that and are probably still feel a certain kind of way about them. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So you know, they still impacting on them. You understand what I'm saying? It's not like, you know, that whole attitude, racism, when they talk about racism and stuff like that. Well, you know, the history of racism itself, the word race that was created to, right, validate
mm-hmm.
enslaving blacks. So, I mean, it just seems so many things of today are connected to slavery. Why on earth would somebody, a black intellectual, right, suggest that we forget about or get over slavery when it's still impacting on us today? How can you get over something that's still impacting on you? It impacted on your daddy, your daddy's daddy, you know, it's going to impact on you, your son, his son. We don't know when it's going to end in terms of totality. Maybe never. But how do you get over something that's, you know, impacting on you in the past? And in the present, and will probably impact on you in the future. It doesn't make sense to me that you would suggest that people get over it. You know what I'm saying? And it's okay to recognize that you're having a hard time because of slavery. You came up in a slave society, your people were slaves and things like that. And you had, you know, all these different laws against you just coming up right up to the day. Then you had these people who don't who are supposed to represent you within the legal system, who are not really, who don't really have your best interests at hand. You know what I'm saying? And in the legal systems, the employment sector and things like that, you know, corporate America, they might not have your best interests at hand because you are black. You know what I'm saying? Unless you have something that they can use. But you know,
those people that would say something like that, they already acquired what they need. Those are the selfish.
They already who?
Those are the ones that we need.
Oh, they saved themselves. Oh.
They saved themselves. They got what they want. They never were worried about what's going to happen to the next person. You know, their surroundings and all that they need may be just that. I got a wife, my kids, and we cool. I'm good with it. As long as they don't come over here
and I came from the projects, right? I came from the projects. Look at me. Them guys don't have to do that.
They don't have to do it, right?
Right. Right. But like they say, you have to deal with people where they are, not where you think they should be. So that's an unrealistic way of looking at how people or how to help people. It might be an excuse not to, because you see yourself as better than them, which adds to that whole big divide, the hierarchy, and the whole attitude that I'm better than thou. I was there, and I'm out of that. Never want to come back to that, and I know what you people was about because I was there with you. Not going to respect to help you out. You ain't worth a damn.
Yep. Nope.
So that's just more division.
More division. More division.
Which is part of what happened with slavery, right? They divided the slaves in a hierarchy. So when you make money, right, and you looking down on a man like you because you made it and he didn't, remember that that's just exactly how that slave hierarchy worked, to keep you divided, to keep you not helping each other. Because I sleep in the house with the masses. I don't sleep in that hut with snow be blowing in wintertime, right?
Right.
I'm sleeping there. So I'm not, like you said, I'm not going to do nothing to mess this up. Up near this fireplace. I may be on the floor next to the dog near the fireplace, but I'm right here with the fireplace. I may have to fetch the wood and stuff like that, but I'm right here. I'm getting the same heat they getting. Right? Like you said, they don't want to lose what they have to help nobody else. So I hope that's not the case for many people, that they're still afraid of their masters. You know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, you can't have a change.
I think
if
that's
you
one of the things.
Are afraid. Huh?
I think there's a lot of people. I think that fear is a big factor. It's kind of funny that you mention that, because it made me think about, you know, right now they're having a problem where the U.S. and FBI and CIA are coming together, because now they're afraid because you have gangs such as Bloods and Crips who are making truces and are coming together, you know, and now the found a new way. I think we spoke about this earlier. I think it's called the Black Identity Extremist. So
how can you be extremely black? That don't make sense. That don't even make sense. I'm going to have to look that up. I'm going to have to do a show on that itself. Extremely black. You're a black extremist.
Extremist. Yep.
That don't make sense. That don't even make sense.
It's a term by the FBI that's being used right now. Black identity.
So are they gonna lock Louis Farrakhan up?
They with everything that's going on with him, I think they're trying to go down that road. I really do. I think they're trying to go down that
like
road.
It. Sounds like they the do. Old practices coming to fruition again. I'm gonna create a law that's gonna criminalize you, it's gonna dehumanize you and degrade you, then I'm gonna come after you in a manner which to all deal with you according to how I have named and called you. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, it sounds like all their practices are coming to pass. We're going to desensitize how you look at things. We're going to show you so much death and killing and getting away with it. After a while, you ain't even going to care. Whether you're black, white, or whatever, you're going to be saying, well, you know what? They must have did something wrong. So I think they're using Well, what's that saying? They say that history repeats itself, and I believe that's what they're doing. It's like, all right, we got a playbook, and we know this play is going to work. We did it before, and, you know, it worked, and now it's coming back around. The playbook is still being used.
Well, that's sad. I just like reading what other people say, because I don't want people to think it's me saying it. There's a young from USA Today, Rochelle Riley, 2018. She said slavery's long legal existence created the American caste system that endures today, one that maintains a false white superiority and black inferiority, built on an unfair education system, unfair employment system, and social institutions that support this notion while appropriating black language, music, and fashion. That means that the black culture, everybody likes it. You can see it being all in the media, you know, high-fiving, all the little things that black people do, you know, the dress, the way they dress, the way they talk, and things like that, right? The music and things like that. Even though the music they have, I don't know about that music, because it doesn't have the rhythm that it used to have. I'm listening to the music, like, what the hell happened? It sounds like mechanical and don't have the rhythm. You know what I mean? I was like, what happened to the rhythm in the music? You know, so, you know, that's a whole song in itself right there, you know. But slavery, and even the slaves had the rhythm with the drums, right, and sticks and stuff like that, right? They had a lot of rhythm.
Well, you know, like you said, that's another show, but just talking about the drums and the rhythm, that was a form of communication and speech and also spirituality. So today we don't have that. We don't have a form of speech. They're not talking about anything. That's why they call it mumble rap. There's no speech. And as far as spirituality, that's out the door. They don't have any. So the messages that we're getting from these artists and these people is nothing. It's designed for nothing. But back then, there was a reason. You know, there was hidden messages, whether it was in the drums and the pattern of the drum, let you know, you know. If you was Indian, hey, we're about to go to war. Nobody else knew that, but they did. So today, again, there's no war, so there's no need to encode anything or to make a speech that, you know, warns people. There's no reason. I'm not at war. I don't have no fears. So.
Okay, well. It's just, you know,
and the simple
it's,
fact that they don't control that industry.
Right. They don't control the industry. And I'm not blaming them. I understand that they're trying to make some money and stuff like that. But once you get the money, can't you build your own record company, do your own distribution? You know what I'm saying? You could buy cars.
Good.
You could meet people. I mean, come on. Can we do something?
We can.
Yeah, you know, that's all I'm saying. Anyway, this lady from USA Today was saying that slavery remains, as Jamil Buell and Rebecca Opinion put it in a September 2015 Slate analyst, a massive institution that shaped and defined the political economy of colonial America and later the United States. An institution that left a profound legacy for the descendants of enslaved Africans, who, even after emancipation, was subjected to almost a century of violence, disenfranchisement, and pervasive oppression with social, economic, and cultural effects that persist to the present. Say, this is slavery remains the subject of a conversation that only one side wants to have, and the other side continues to put off decades after decade after decade. So that doesn't sound like something blacks should forget. It sounds more like something blacks should pass down, as you said, right, from generation to generation, like they do Christmas, Easter, Mother's Day, and Father's Day. It sounds like something blacks should use to unify on a social, economic, political, and community level. I don't know.
I agree.
You know, call me foolish. Is that like dreaming? Is that like a wild dream?
I don't think it's a wild dream, but I think in order for that to happen, that the system that we know of as of now has to fall. And I know some people might not like that, the sound of it, but what they call a new world order, this system is going to have to fall. And we may have a chance at that particular time after that, you know, but I don't see that we will, because we're a part of the system now. You know, we're in it, and we don't have enough people out here that want to not be a part of it. You know, so not they know that they can get a burger for a dollar. We have very sensitive people nowadays. They don't want to kill the cow. They don't want to kill a chicken. They don't want to plant food. You know, what's the word? We're dependent. We're dependent.
And what's that word when you use, when you talk about the slave? Total dependency.
Total dependency.
See, you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So the dependency is another attribute of a slave. I mean, when you, especially when you're dependent on someone who doesn't have your best interests at hand. When you, if I'm, that's like the step, you know, that you talk about the stepchild, that she's dependent or he's dependent on the step parent who's treating him bad. So his kids get what they want and what they need, right? And they get to improve their quality of life, while the stepchild is just about 100 steps behind them. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you get you got one pair of shoes. You get two dresses, one to wear while you're washing the other one, and another, and you take that one and wear it while you're washing that one. You know, that kind of scenario. I'm not saying that's exactly how it goes down. I'm just exaggerating to make a point. So, you know, if you are dependent upon an entity that does not have your best interest at hand, you are at the same mercy that the slaves were.
Yep.
There's another characteristic that's kind of carried over. And maybe it's carried over because of the slavery in itself still present.
It's
not
still
just
present.
The things that slavery was built on. Maybe the whole concept of slavery just changed. It morphed. We have another call. Let me get this caller in before we leave today. Caller, welcome to Provocative Thought.
Hey, Carlton, how are you?
What's up, brother Ken?
Yeah, what you described is what's going on today. We're being dependent on a government, and a society don't have our best interests. And there are so many theories and perspectives or solution on how to combat this. From separating to having our own agenda, but get back to the original question: should we forget about slavery? No, we should not. But you have a lot of people, a lot of black institutions out there that are advocating that we, you know, slavery's in the past. Keep it in the past, we have to move on to the future. Because if we do forget about slavery, guess what? We're living the modern day slavery now. You know, there's the new Jim Crow laws, the way we depend on government to bail us out.
Yeah, 1 minute.
Oh, and so I just in agreement that we, with the brother, that we should not forget about slavery, because
right. And you know what? I'm in agreement with you.
Yeah.
And him.
Can
we vote? Can we have a vote right here? How many people say we should not forget about slavery? Aye.
Will you be
aye. Gotta be kidding.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised how many young black folks feel about slavery today.
Well, you know, it's sad. And on that note, I have to conclude our show for today. I want to thank you guys for calling in, everybody for listening in to the show. Until next week, each one reach one, each one teach one.
King.
Peace out, y'all.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.